Chapter 11. The ride through the winding forest was long, but I kept my eyes glued ahead of us and guided us toward our target. We passed places that looked familiar, and I instantly realized that we'd passed these places on the journey to trap and kill the Drake. I vaguely remembered Burskan, but not as vividly as the larger, more impoverished town farther down the road. When I racked my brain for any memory of the city, all that came to me was the enormous wrought iron gate with the town's name emblazoned across it. From my understanding, Burskan rested in a small valley nestled between two massive mountains, quite like Edenheart, with the entrance sitting a little higher at the top of the incline. We hadn't seen the city proper, and I wondered if it would be any different than our home city, but we'd soon find out. I gritted my teeth, lifted my head, and gazed up at the darkening sky above our heads. Then I glanced over at the sleeping Daisy at my side and peeked over my shoulder into the first cabin's confines. Ryan sat at the small table with a book in one hand and rested the other on her belly. "Ryan, prepare the women. We'll be there soon, maybe within the next 2 hours. I want everyone to be ready to explore the city as soon as we find a good place to leave the caravan."
"Okay, Charles,"
the imp woman nodded, dropped the book to the tabletop, and then stood.
"Edeni said the woods surround the entrance into Burskan. We should be able to drive the horses and cabins through. We need to stay out of sight while we're there."
"Isn't it kind of funny?" I chuckled darkly, and turned in my seat to face the road ahead. So many times in my life I've been called a scuttling rat, disappearing into the shadows after doing dirty deeds. And now I've taken that comparison and turned it on those who used it against me. "Tell me, Ryan, have you heard of the Scarlet Death? Have I ever told you about it?"
"No, Charles. What is it?"
"Before I was born, there was an explosion of revolution in the larger cities. The smaller towns thrived with wealth and culture and expanded beyond their means. That's when the rats moved in and took up spaces in their homes. People started getting sick, and at first, it was flu-like symptoms. It started with body chills, a common ill feeling, and high fevers. Then the muscle cramps came, seizures, boils, and gangrene as infections set in and ate away at the flesh. No one knew they were infected until they showed the symptoms, but they'd unknowingly already spread it to those around them. That's when people started dying by the hundreds. The sick were shipped off to an isolated island, where they were left to die, and plague doctors freely wandered the city, treating patients and escorting them out to the island when there was no chance at hope."
"The rats were doing all of this? The rats were the ones infecting the people?"
"No. The rats weren't the ones who caused the infection. It was the tiny fleas on the rats who infected the humans. In fact, the rats almost had no part in it." "Isn't that funny? That such small, insignificant creatures almost ended the entire human race merely by existing?"
"What are you trying to say, Charles?"
Ryan asked and raised a single eyebrow. "Maybe what the aristocrats say about us brutes is really true," I smirked with the reins held tightly in my hands. "Maybe we are rats. We've lived underneath the aristocrats' heels for so long, scurrying out of the way as they attempt to trample us. But we still manage to survive. Maybe this is our Scarlet Death moment. It's our turn to rise and kill those who've hurt us for so long."
"I think you are, Charles. Though I wouldn't call you a rat. You're not vermin or a pest. You're simply a man who's grown tired of the treatment of your sex. You took your hate and rage and turned it into something else. Brilliance and genius that's brought us to this stage of our lives. It's our turn to rise against the aristocrats. Teach them that they can't bite the hand that feeds them. The males have laid in wait for too long. It's time to take back what's theirs."
"Exactly," I grunted, jerked my wrists, and slapped the reins against the horses' backs. "The world will soon learn that men aren't as weak as they think they are. The world is within my grasp, Ryan." I stared straight ahead across the darkening path and kept Burskan in my mind like a burning lamp off in the distance. Only a few more hours, and then we'd see the city that would soon be under our control. I was curious to see the dynamic there, and if it were any different than Edenheart's aristocrats and men. Before long, Daisy awoke from beside me and lit the lamps on either side of the driver's seat. My heart hammered in my chest, sweat beaded on the back of my neck, and my right leg jiggled anxiously against the driver's seat's wooden floorboards. I couldn't sit still. I wanted to get there as soon as possible and start work on figuring out how we'd infiltrate and attack the Marchioness. The next 2 hours flew by, and right as we were about to come around a big bend, Daisy lowered the lamp's wicks. If anyone were coming in or out of the city, we didn't want them to notice us, especially since I drove an enormous caravan down the main road that led into town. The bear girl fidgeted nervously from behind me, and when I glanced over at her, Daisy's honey-colored eyes were wide in the dim light. "Are you nervous?" I asked.
"No."
The brunette shook her head, clasped her hands tightly in her lap, and leaned forward in her seat.
"I'm ready to start. We need this city, Charles. We need them and their masses of aristocrats. Not only that, but I want to fight. I know that we can't kill them, but I want to attack and change them for the better. When I close my eyes and think about the future, I see a world where everyone is like us. Maybe not exactly like us, but with the same mindset and beliefs. Once all of the aristocrats are gone, the world will be a much better place."
"I fully believe that. We just have to take it one step at a time. Think of it this way, my love. Each city that we go into and take over is another stepping stone closer to the capital and killing the queen."
"Do you think you'll kill the queen, Charles? Or do you think that you'll transform her into a monster woman?"
"I haven't decided yet. The queen has been in power for a very long time, before any of us were born. I'm pretty sure before anyone currently living on this earth was born. I don't know much about her power, and if she's strong, but I'd like to believe that I'd transform her. But she was one of the women who started all of the male suffering. She could have ended it at any time if she wanted to. And I think that's what troubles me so much. You see, with Edeny, or any of the other aristocrats, they were raised that way, groomed to believe that men were inferior. But the queen, at some point in her life, as she developed powers, she looked around at all of the men and decided that they were beneath her. She's the one who took control and made us what we are."
"I want to kill her. Now that you've explained it a little bit better, I think she deserves to die. I can understand the nobles and their ways of thinking, as you said, but the queen, she didn't grow up in a world where men were treated like vermin. She was born into a place where all humans were equal, and she didn't like it."
"Exactly. But that still doesn't mean she doesn't deserve a second chance at life. I think that every aristocrat deserves to be reborn and see the true light behind all of their horrible actions. To bring her up again, look at Edeny. You and Valerie were the ones who saw how she treated me in the beginning. I was nothing more than a slave to her, and yet, look at her now. Every time the past is brought up, she's so apologetic. She hates that was the type of person that she used to be."
"Well, I stand firm in my opinion. The queen deserves to be killed and her throne taken from her. She's already killed so many men, maybe not with her own hands, but she allowed others to do so. Her never-ending life is soaked and splattered with the blood of dead men, and I don't think that she should receive redemption."
"Redemption? Is that what you want to call it?"
"Yes. When we come out of your machine, we're pure. Our minds are scrubbed clean from all of our past mistakes. But if we did that for the queen, it'd take more than a mop and bucket to clean up her past transgressions."
"But we have to remember we forgave Edeny," I uttered. "When I first created Ryan, I said something along the lines of, I could never transform her and feel love for her. Look at us now, Daisy. I love Edeny with all of my heart, and I'm glad that I transformed her. Imagine what it'd be like if we transformed the queen. Not only would it be a great feat for our side, but we would have transformed one of the most powerful women in the country."
"Edeny's transgressions aren't as severe as the queen's. As we both said before, Edeny was raised to believe the things that everyone around her said. So it's only natural that she became a man-hating aristocrat. The queen wasn't born into a world where men were slaves and workers. She thought that independently and poisoned the rest of the women to think the same. I stand firm in my opinion. We should kill her for what she's done to this country."
I had to agree with the petite brunette, but I still wasn't sure what I would do with the queen. I wanted to transform her and make her into one of my monster women, but as Daisy said, I didn't think that it would forgive everything she'd done over the hundreds of years if we did that. As the Bear Girl said, she could have stopped all of this if she wanted to, but she didn't, and kept on with the opposite sex's slaughter. "I'll think more on it," I smiled calmly. "It'll be a long time before we reach the capital, but I'll let you know what I decide."
"You're the one who tells us what to do. But you know my opinion, and what I think we should do with her."
"You see?" I chuckled under my breath. "Isn't that the nice thing about being a monster woman? Your opinion is just as valid as mine, and I listen to each of them. All of you deserve to have a voice, but I have to say this because if I don't, I think I wouldn't be able to hold it in anyway. You have a voice in this world, Daisy, but I want you to understand. For the longest time, I didn't. That's why I'm the one to make the hard decisions. No man has had a voice for hundreds of years, and finally it's time for us to speak up and roar with our hearts filled with rage."
"And I will be there beside you, roaring with you and all of the other men. I'm here to fight with you, Charles, and your voice, as you said, is a bit more important than mine right now."
The two of us stared straight forward, and I pulled back on the reins as something big and black loomed in the darkness ahead. In the distance, I could make out the glowing lights of a city just below the horizon. We'd made it there in one long day, and I mentally prepared myself for everything I was about to see. The road curved and then dropped down into a steep slope right after the enormous wrought-iron entrance, and I glanced around the sides of the road for any place that we could pull off. The trees were thick on all sides, but right as we were about to pass underneath the sign, I pulled back on the reins again and spotted a large space between two mighty oaks. Then I shifted the leather in my hands and guided the horses toward it as I leaned my head back. The enormous sign towered over us, and I could just barely make out the city's name written across it in the dark. I swiveled my eyes downward right as the horses crept forward into the trees and finally caught sight of the town. Briscan reminded me a bit of Edenheart, but not by much. In fact, it reminded me more of the more populated cities closer to the capital. The cluster of buildings in the middle of the town towered over everything else, and the rest of the town sprawled out around it. It looked like a miniature metropolis out in the middle of the mountains. To me, Edenheart looked more quaint and country-like than all of this. Outside of the cluster, maze-like streets zigzagged across the land with large homes marking where each wealthy and powerful aristocrat lived. I assumed that more of them lived in the cluster in the middle, but I counted off how many I could see from this distance. 35 powerful aristocrats. The rest of them must be the working-class nobles. I wonder which one the Marchioness lives in.
"That building,"
Edeny whispered into my ear, leaned out of the small window behind me, and pointed directly in the cluster's middle.
"I've been here a few times and remember it well. She lives in the largest building, on the highest floor, so she can look out over the city and protect it from brute mongrels."
"She lives there? That's strange. I would have assumed that she lived in one of the enormous manors on the outskirts."
"Oh, no."
The she-wolf shook her head.
"Samilla isn't like that. She needs to be close to the action. She's not the most cunning, but don't mistake that for weakness. I've never seen her power in action, but I've heard about it before. Edney, didn't you tell us that this used to be part of your duchy?" "Yes, until the Queen took it away from me and put the Marchioness in control of everything."
"Valerie!" I shouted over my shoulder, and the feline woman quickly appeared behind the Duchess. "Keep that place in mind. Once we have the lay of the land, the two of us will infiltrate it using your invisibility and find out everything we can."
"Okie dokie!"
The cat girl sang and squinted toward the enormous building I pointed out. "Edeny, how far into the forest do you think we'll have to go? Does anyone come out here?"
"No,"
the she-wolf stated, and then glanced over her shoulder.
"This should be far enough. The people of Briscan don't go into the forest and commune with animals. They're much different than the nobles from Edenheart. They don't respect the nature around them. And they industrialized so fast that it almost happened within a single breath."
"So, did you industrialize it, or—"
Valerie asked, and the wolf woman shook her head.
"No. It was the Queen's request, and the Marchioness is undertaking. It used to be a lot like home, but I barely recognize it now. The Queen encroaching on my family's ancestral domain was a big part of my motivation to rebel."
I pulled back on the reins, and the horses neighed softly in response as the caravan slowed to a stop. I turned in my seat and stared out over the city for a long moment. Looking down at it, I felt a strange, eerie feeling pool in my chest. I'd never been here, but somehow I felt as if I'd walked these streets many times in another life. Maybe it was my future calling out to me and showing me the things I would have in the future. But I shook my shoulders and clenched my hands to rid myself of the odd sensation. "Is everyone ready?" I asked. "Be sure to wear head coverings and clothes that'll hide your tails. It's not that big of a deal right now since we can stick to the shadows, but I still want all of us to be careful."
"I'm almost ready,"
Ryan called from the back.
"What about you, Cleia? Are you ready?"
Yeah, just give me a second. I'm trying to stuff my ears into this dang bonnet, but it's so uncomfortable."
"Please bear with me for just this once," I soothed. "If it's too uncomfortable, you don't have to go with us."
"Not go with you?"
the turquoise-haired woman nearly shouted.
"Not go? Are you crazy? I'm going with you. I want to see what Buscon is like, even if I have to hide my ears."
"You're so lucky, Daisy,"
the imp woman sighed.
"Your ears and tails are so easy to hide. I wish mine were like that."
The black-haired beauty dipped into a large trunk we'd brought with us, tossed out a few hats, and then grabbed one large enough. The imp woman glanced down at its material, sighed softly, and then forced it down onto her head. The imp's horns fought against the hat's fabric for a moment, and then ripped through it. But that didn't stop the stunning woman. Ryan reached back into the trunk, grabbed a sheer piece of fabric, and then rested it atop her horns, then turned toward us.
"Where'd you learn to do that? That looks so cool! I wish I had horns!"
"I didn't learn it anywhere. I gotta do what I gotta do not to be noticed."
"That's actually very fashionable right now, Ryan,"
Edeny commented and pulled herself out of the window.
"They used to be popular a few hundred years ago, but they're slowly making a comeback. They're called hennins, and they're primarily worn by royalty or those of pure blood. So if anyone does see us, they won't bother you because they'll think you're from a powerful family."
"Ooh,"
the imp woman cooed.
"Even better."
"No fair! I want one too!"
"Val, have you been feeling all right? You're normally so supportive of your sisters, but as of late, you've been acting somewhat jealous."
I...
The cat girl stuttered as she blinked her oceanic blue eyes.
"Well, I'm sorry, Charles. And I'm sorry, Ryan. I'm just very emotional as of late. Right after Ryan told us she was pregnant. I don't want to be mean."
"Oh, sweetie, it's fine,"
Ryan cooed as she hugged the ash-haired woman.
"I didn't notice much."
"You know,"
Edeny began,
"trouble managing emotions is often a sign of changing hormones."
"But I don't want my hormones to change. I like them just the way they are."
"My dear, I believe what Edeny is hinting at is that your hormones might be changing because your body is changing."
"Well, I don't want my body to change,"
the feline meowed into Ryan's shoulder.
"Oh, it would have to change if you were carrying Charles's baby,"
Edeny chuckled. Valerie's blue eyes opened as wide as I'd ever seen them, and her jaw dropped. She didn't say anything for a few seconds, but then she looked down at her lean tummy and let out a giggle.
"Do you really think so? A little baby in my little tummy has been making me so whiny? That's amazing! Oh, Charles, it's my turn! Hooray!"
"We don't know for sure," I chuckled. "Have you had any nausea or such in the mornings?"
"Nope,"
Val replied, but she wasn't looking at me. Instead, she was gently petting her lean stomach and purring.
"Hello, little baby in my tummy. I'm so happy you're in my tummy. I'm gonna eat some yummy food so you can have company in my tummy."
I was about to tell her that it didn't quite work like that, but it was obvious that Val was very happy right now, and I didn't want to point out that we didn't know for sure if she was pregnant or not and ruin her mood. Instead, I just told them all to continue getting ready, and Edeny worked on Val's hat while the cat girl hummed a happy tune to her own stomach. Once all of my women settled on hats and dresses to wear that would cover their animalistic features, I climbed off of the driver's seat. All of my monster women piled out of the caravan, with Josephine taking up the lead. The Drake woman looked extremely uncomfortable in an enormous hat and the same sheer fabric resting over her horns. Since Josephine had the largest tail out of all my women, she layered 4 different shawls over her skirt and fussed to keep them in place. "Are we ready?" I asked and gestured toward the steep hill below us. "We're about to see what Briskaan is like for the very first time."
"Ready!"
Valerie giggled and clapped her hands excitedly.
"Mm-hmm."
Edeni purred, rested a hand onto my shoulder, and stared out over the city she once owned.
"Yes, sadly,"
Josephine grumbled.
"I'm excited to go, but man, all of these layers are making me hotter than high noon in July."
"I'm ready,"
Daisy nodded and fitted her bonnet on over her small brown ears.
"Yep, yep, yep,"
Cleia squealed.
"Yes, Charles."
Ryan nodded and then scrambled to keep the black fabric in place over her horns. "Then let's go," I breathed and started down the hill. We'd been in an empty Edenheart for so long, it was strange to hear the sounds of carriages rattling down the streets and people calling out to each other as they moved from tavern to tavern. The buildings changed perspective through the trees and loomed over us with their well-lit candles in the windows. Some of them had their curtains open, and I could clearly see in as the nobles went about their daily lives. Little did they know that all of it would end very soon. Right as we were about to emerge from the woods, I lowered my head and slowed my walk until I was all the way at the group's back. My women didn't even have to ask what I was doing. They already understood. This wasn't Edenheart, where I was the lord and master. Here in Briskaan, I had to play the part and become a loyal consort to all of them. Just as I expected, the streets weren't teeming with aristocrats, but a handful of them walked to and fro on their ways back home. For some odd reason, the light seemed brighter here, and it felt as if we would be found out the second we stepped underneath the lit street lamps. The aristocrats moving from the taverns were loud and obviously drunk from the strong ale served there, so they paid very little attention to us.
"Where are we going, Charles?"
Valerie hissed under her breath.
"Where should we head?"
"Edeni," I grumbled and lowered my face even more. "Guide us to the Marchioness."
"Of course, Charles."
The she-wolf nodded, stepped forward, and floated down the street with assured ease. Edeni seemed to have slipped easily back into the person she used to be, and walked with her spine straight as a rod, and her head held high, and her facial expression cool and calm. I remembered this version of the Duchess so much, but seeing it didn't strike fear into my heart like it used to. She was mine now. I owned her. Doing all of this felt funny to me. It was as if all of us were playing pretend, and once in a while, when an aristocrat spied us from the other side of the street, one of my monster women would turn and scold me to keep up. Each time this happened, playfulness danced in their eyes, and a small, sly smile crept over their lips. It may have seemed real to all the outsiders, but I knew that all of it was fake. These were my women, and everything they did or said was by my command. Edeni led us through the winding streets, and suddenly the road tilted upward. We climbed up it toward the larger buildings, and finally the Marchioness's home appeared between the towering metal giants. Massive spires flanked all 4 corners of the building, and light flooded out of the floor-to-ceiling windows. There were a lot more people in this part of the city, but when I looked at them, I could tell that something was off. Unlike all the aristocrats in Edenheart, these nobles wore torn clothing, smattered with dirt and grime. Their eyes were glossy and had faraway looks in them as they moved away from the enormous building directly in the middle of the city. I half expected every noble in Briskaan to wear elegant dresses and be decked out in glittering jewelry, but that wasn't the case here.
"What's wrong with them?"
Valerie whispered.
"I thought aristocrats were supposed to be, you know, aristocratic-looking."
"I don't know," I shook my head. "Edeni, do you have any idea what's going on here?"
"I have a hunch, but we'll have to get there and see if it's true."
I kept my eyes glued to the Marchioness's building as if it were a beacon, but as soon as an aristocrat passed, I slammed my gaze back down to the pavement ahead of me. A few women glanced in our direction, but they didn't look at me. They looked at Ryan and Josephine. It seemed what Edeni said was true about the Henin, but none of them stopped us or asked any questions. As we neared the intended building, a single loud voice interrupted my thoughts, and chills raced up and down my spine.
"What is this shit?"
the feminine voice screamed.
"I thought you told me you were bringing me fresh apples straight from the orchards. These are rotten! Do you think these are a proper offering to your leader? Get out of my sight, you dirty pig! The next time I see you, you better bring me fresh ones to send to the queen, or else it's your head in the noose!
The crowd was thicker here, and the seven of us fought through the crowd to see what was happening up front. A woman holding a large woven basket brushed past us with a low sob and tore off down the street. The apples in her basket were bright red and shiny. I didn't see anything wrong with them.
"Who's that?"
Daisy murmured.
"Is that a guard or soldier or something?"
"No."
Edeny shook her head and glared forward.
"That's Samilla, the Marchioness."
The crowd parted for a moment, and I stared over the shoulders of my women. My eyes landed on an almost comically short woman standing on the building's front steps. Just as Edeny described, her long, flowing hair was bright pink with maroon tips. Her large, doll-like eyes glowed in the dim light, and from this distance away, I noticed they were a deep shade of bluish-green. She looked like a porcelain doll, or a child in her frilly white dress with pink lace and bows. The tiny woman crossed her arms over her chest and turned toward the female guard standing behind her.
"Next!"
Samilla screamed. The guard glanced down at the clipboard, scanned the parchment held there, and then cleared her throat loudly.
"Drusilla Haverty,"
the woman shouted.
"Come forward with your offerings."
A woman across the crowd tiptoed closer with a burlap sack held tightly to her chest. Her hair was light brown and tears streaked down her chubby cheeks. Drusilla held the bag so hard that her thin knuckles turned white, and her entire body shook with tremors.
"I hope it's more than last time,"
Samilla growled.
"I'm getting tired of these games, Drusilla. I know how wealthy your family is. There should be far more offerings than this."
"Oh, I'm sorry, Samilla,"
the woman whimpered, lowered herself closer to the ground, and cowered before she thrust the burlap bag forward.
"Like I told you last time, these offerings are draining my family's coffers. I'm not making money fast enough to give you the same amount every time. Please, if you need more, make the collection every 4 days instead of 2.
"If you can't get the money in time,"
the doll-like woman barked,
"then make your slaves work harder. I'm sure that giving them a heavier load would satisfy them. All the brutes know that when the offerings come in and are taken to the capital, the queen is happy with their work. That small sliver of approval will boost their morale."
"I've tried that. 10 of my men died last week, and I can't afford to buy more from the market."
"Excuse after excuse. You know what? In 2 days, I want double the normal amount. Either you work hard to please your queen, or you don't get to live freely. Would you like to work in your fields? I can arrange that. You'll stand shoulder to shoulder with reeking vermin. And guess what, Drusilla? I bet you'll fit right in."
The guard stepped forward, lifted the bag of what I assumed was coins, and then took it to the pile of items behind them. The female uncovered a large scale and rested the heavy bag down into one of the gilt cups and then rested a gold bar in the other. The crowd waited in silence as the scale tilted, wobbled, and then finally righted itself.
"She's about 2,000 short,"
the guard sneered.
"What shall we do, Samilla?"
"Add it to her debt to the queen. Drusilla, you know what we owe the queen. We owe her our lives, and you can pay it in different ways, with money, with produce, with items. But you can also die for her. If you don't bring the double amount plus the missing 2,000, you'll do exactly that. I know it's scary. The world is scary, but we still need to pay for the luxuries that we have. We're better than men. Act like it. Whip your slaves and drive them into the ground until you make the money the queen needs."
"I can't, Samilla,"
the girl cried and threw back her head.
I only have 2,000 in the bank. The fields aren't producing as much as they have in the past years. Please, is there anything else I can do?"
"You can die,"
the childlike woman commanded. The petite woman, dressed in white, glared down at Drusilla and then smirked wickedly. In an instant, Samilla jabbed out her hand, and a hole appeared where the second woman's head should have been. I swept my gaze around the air and then leaned my head back as I searched for the telltale portal that Edeny warned us about. Near the roof of the towering building, a speck told me that's where Samilla portaled the aristocrat's head, and the woman's hoarse voice roared in fear from such a sight. Samilla cackled once and then sliced her arms down through the air. Both portals disappeared instantly, and scarlet blood spewed from Jacilla's severed neck. Her body crumpled onto her knees and then flopped to the ground in front of the steps. A faint whistling sound reached our ears, and I instantly knew what it was. "Cover your eyes if you don't wish to see," I commanded my women. Valerie hastily lifted her hands and covered her face with them right as Drusilla's head smashed into the concrete. Blood and gore splattered up the sidewalk in a wide, thick stripe, and Samilla grinned down at us in satisfaction. The petite, pink-haired aristocrat lifted her head and stepped down two stairs with her arms spread wide.
"Do you see this?"
Samilla asked and gestured to the bloodied ground.
"I want all of you to memorize it. This could be you. This could be all of you. You have a duty and a debt to the Queen. I am here to make sure that you repay it. I was put in charge of this city because you lack discipline and order."
"Is this what order looks like to you?"
an unseen aristocrat screamed somewhere within the crowd.
"Does this look like order? You're bleeding us dry and killing us when we can't provide."
"Who said that?"
Samilla snarled.
"Edeny would have never done these things to us,"
another noble roared.
"All of us should have moved to Edenheart when you came to power. Edeny was a far better leader than you will ever be. We don't want you here, Samilla. Leave. Concede your rule back to Edeny and go back to the capital."
The tiny woman in white pointed to another guard waiting in the wings and then turned back toward the crowd with a single pointed finger.
"Find them,"
Samilla screamed.
"Find the traitors and bring them to me. Anyone who breathes Edeny's name in this city has committed treason and shall receive punishment. The Queen will not relent on this. I was given direct orders to bring anyone in who speaks about the Duchess of Edenheart in this city. This is my city now. Mine! Mine! Mine!"
I glanced over the she-wolf, and silently she closed her right hand into a fist and pressed it into the middle of her chest. The wolf woman's expression hardened, and her violet eyes slashed into Samilla across the crowd. I knew what she wanted to do. The Duchess wished to show herself and attack at this very moment, but she couldn't. We had to stay hidden. For now. Quietly and without anyone noticing, I reached out and rested my hand on Edeny's shoulder. The she-wolf didn't react, but unclasped her hand and brushed her fingertips against mine. I sensed her pain and anger through her skin, but right now, there was nothing that we could do about it. Samilla glared out over the crowd with her tiny hands clenched into pale fists. Her arms and legs shook with anger, but no one stepped forward and identified themselves as the speaker. The pink-haired woman pinched the bridge of her nose, closed her eyes for half a second, and then turned back toward her guard.
"Are there any more names?"
Samilla asked the guard with the clipboard.
"No."
The guard shook her head and held the clipboard behind her back.
"No more for today. Drusilla was the last one."
"Fine."
The woman dressed in white grumbled and then lifted her doll-like face to the crowd.
"This is a final warning for all of you. You saw what happened to Drusilla, and you saw what happened to Morgana before her. If your offerings are not acceptable or not the amount you've been told to give, your fate will be the same. Now go home. I will see you all in 2 days.
I watched from the bustling crowd as Samilla turned, placed her hands behind her back, and then spoke quietly to the guard beside her. As the guard moved away, Samilla looked out over the crowd and giggled happily to herself before her wide eyes swiveled to the crumpled body lying on the concrete. She looked absolutely delighted at the horrific scene below her, and I wondered if this was the extent of what she would do, or what other gruesome things she'd subject the citizens of Burskan to.
"I can't believe this,"
Edeny murmured.
"I'm not saying that I care about how the aristocrats are treated, but I never expected them to do something like this to them. Women are supposed to be higher beings, and the Queen is turning against them. What the hell is even happening in the capital?
What about the debts they owe to the Queen?
Josephine asked.
I've never heard of something like that before. I mean, I was born in Edenheart, but nothing like this has ever happened. I don't understand.
What is she trying to accomplish? What does she think all of this will do?
It's almost like the decree you put out, I uttered, when you asked for the aristocrats to turn in their wealth, assets, and their consorts. But I know the reason behind all of that. What possibly could be happening in the capital?
They could be suffering. Or the queen could be stretching herself too thin and needs more revenue from all of the smaller cities.
What would cause that?
Valerie asked.
Many things. Expanding armies is one of them. But there could be other options that we're not thinking about. I'm sure we'll find out eventually when we reach the capital, but Charles might be able to find out more once you sneak into Smilla's house.
Charles?
Valerie whispered as she absently rubbed her belly.
Should we go back to the caravan, or can we keep exploring?
No, I grunted under my breath. Edany, Ryan, Daisy, Cleia, and Josephine, go back to the caravan. Valerie, prepare yourself. We're going in right now. It'd be useless if we went back to the caravan, regrouped, and then returned tomorrow. We need to go in while it's still fresh.
What should we do when we get back to the caravan?
Josephine asked. Train with Edany, I grumbled, grabbed the ash blonde by the wrist, and pulled her toward the towering building in front of us. Then eat your dinner and wait for us to come back. We'll tell you everything once we return, and we'll formulate a plan then.
What are you going to do?
Daisy breathed and gripped onto my sleeve.
Please be careful, Charles. Before you go in, clear your head and take a few breaths. You can't just barrel in there and expect them not to notice you, even if you're invisible.
Charles! Are we going to go in and kill her right now?
No. I shook my head and took a single step forward through the teeming crowd. We're not going to kill her. We're going to transform her into my newest monster girl. But not right now. Valerie, let's go.